Hey everyone, how you guys doing? Matt Jarbo here from Milk Carton Mysteries. I'd like to apologize for my absence over the course of the past couple weeks. I had a case that I was looking into IRL kind of blow up in my face a little bit. It's an interesting story, but it's one that I can't go into full detail on, but it kind of just took the wind out of my sails due to my own fault and the other people involved as well. It's a bit of a mess. But that being said, it gave me a little bit of time to contemplate how I want to spend my time online. And while I like covering the day-to-day cases, I also want to get into longer-form scripted storytelling. So I'm working on that as a side project. So today, I wanted to share with you guys a new story that I'm working on. This is a story of Miriam Rodriguez, a mother whose daughter was kidnapped and killed by the cartel in 2012, and her unyielding resolve into bringing 10 members of that particular crew to justice. So strap in, stay tuned, and please feel free to head over to Instagram.com/milkcartoncast or Facebook.com/groups/themilkcarton to let me know your thoughts about this. I had a lot of fun writing and making this episode, and I wanted to share it with you. So without further ado, please enjoy it, and I'll talk to you guys later. Have yourself a great New Year's. I'll see you back next week. Love you, and peace out. There are many times in our lives when we hear about an event or we witness it in a movie and we think to ourselves, yeah, I could do that, right? I could totally do that. That's totally easy for me to do. Not even an issue in the world, barely an inconvenience, right? Or maybe we would wish that something like that would happen to us in order to live out this kind of pseudo-deranged fantasy to take us out of our mundane lives. And if you think I'm wrong, how many times do you watch action movies like Die Hard, or in this case, particularly the movie Taken, for example, okay? Liam Neeson, 2008, is a man with a certain set of skills whose teenage daughter gets kidnapped for the sex trade industry, and then he decides to go off, grab his gun, use those skills, and hunt the men down. Ultimately, he does in fact save his kid, but he leaves a wake of bodies in the process. And a lot of people love this movie because they believe that in that situation, they would ultimately end up doing the exact same thing. If their kid was kidnapped or their kid was hurt, they would hunt these people down. They would take them out. Vigilante justice, no consequences, just like we see in the movies. But this story, this is the story of Miriam Rodriguez, a mother who decided to do the exact same thing, except there's no happy ending. 52-year-old Miriam Rodriguez was working as a live-in nanny in Texas when her daughter, Karen Alejandra Salinas Rodriguez, was taken at gunpoint in January of 2012. During the week, the 52-year-old mother of three, like I said, was working as a live-in nanny in Texas, while her family lived in San Fernando, a town in the Mexican state of Tamaulipas. San Fernando was not a nice place to live. In fact, the nearly 60,000 residents for a time were stuck in a brutal battle between two warring cartels, the Los Zetas and the Gulf Cartel. To give you an idea of just how bad the Los Zetas were, you need to know about two major massacres that happened in San Fernando during the height of the Mexican drug war right before Miriam's daughter was kidnapped. The first massacre, known as the 2010 San Fernando Massacre, occurred following a gunfight between drug cartel gunmen and Mexican authorities, in which three gunmen and a Marine were killed. Afterward, while the authorities patrolled a nearby area, they found something utterly horrifying. 72 bodies were discovered in a remote ranch near San Fernando. It was considered the biggest single discovery of its kind in the ongoing drug war. All in all, the discovery proved that 58 men and 14 women who were all believed to be undocumented immigrants from South and Central America trying to cross through Mexico into the United States. Now, a surviving migrant at the time claimed that these migrants were kidnapped by the Los Zetas cartel and were killed for ultimately refusing to work for them. At the time during this discovery, also 21 rifles, 101 ammunition clips, 4 bulletproof vests, camouflage uniforms, and 4 vehicles were seized by the federales. And the craziest thing is that the bodies were found in a room, some of which were just straight up piled on top of each other. This was disgusting and terrible, but The second massacre in 2011 was after Mexican authorities exhumed more than 40 mass graves, leaving the final body count of corpses to roughly 193. The Los Zetas were actually in a gang war with the Gulf Cartel, and they kidnapped and ransomed people to help fuel that war. But they loved to make a show of it. Ultimately, these guys were not fucking around, like, at all. And it was these men who, on January 23rd, 2012, surrounded Karen Rodriguez's truck at a stoplight, forcibly entered the car, and drove off with her. That was the last time anybody saw her alive. The kidnappers took Karen back to her family home, bound and gagged her. And this is where they started to work on their next move, but they were interrupted when Karen's uncle, a mechanic, disrupted things by showing up to work on the family truck. The Los Zetas cartel members freaked the hell out, grabbed the uncle as well, and then they all fled the property. From there, the kidnappers started to demand thousands and thousands of dollars to free Karen. And Miriam's family paid the money. In fact, one of the things that they did was take out a loan from a bank that specialized in paying out in ransoms. That is how frequent it is down in Mexico. And so they took out a line of credit to pay for this stuff. They followed every single instruction to the T. And sadly, Karen never materialized. Now, Miriam, in a last-ditch effort to find her daughter, asked the Los Zetas to sit down for a meeting, one that, surprisingly, they accepted. She met them at a small cafe in San Fernando, and she pleaded and pleaded for her daughter to be returned. In fact, she spoke with a man that she only knew at the time by the name of L. Jr., and he was on the phone with whoever was in charge. He was just a lackey sent in with a walkie-talkie to convey messages back with the big boss. It was here that Miriam got her first clue in regards to who these men were. She got the first name of the guy she was talking to, Sama. Sama was L. Jr. Now, the Los Zetas, they denied any knowledge about what happened, any knowledge of the kidnapping, and they actually offered to help Miriam find Karen for the small sum of $2,000. And being as desperate as she was, this was kind of Miriam's last option, so to speak, so she gave him the money, and obviously this turned up nothing. In fact, the cartel members called asking for more money, which the family paid. And this went on until the kidnappers simply just stopped answering their phones and went silent. Now, in movies, we are always waiting for like the breaking point in a person's life before they do something drastic. Or we wait for the really cool fuck you moment when the hero tells the bad guy that they're coming to get them. Miriam actually had her own moment, but just like the story, while it might mirror things you see in movies, the result is not awe-inspiring. In fact, it was anger and rage that pushed Miriam to this point, and in my opinion, what she did next was completely justified. A few weeks after the last payment to the cartel, Miriam, who had recently moved in with her daughter Azalea, came down one morning almost a completely different person. According to family, she told Azalea that she knew Karen wasn't coming back. She didn't say it like it was a wild guess. She knew it. Deep down, she knew she'd never see her daughter again. This was mother's intuition. And she told her daughter that she wouldn't rest until she found the men responsible for who had taken Karen. She would hunt them down, one by one, until the day she died. Azalea watched her mother's sadness harden into a resolve, and her hope gave way to revenge. The New York Times article that covered this story in great detail has a really great line in here about hope and what it can ultimately do to us in these dire situations. It says, "Hope is a toxin that poisons many families of the missing. They either purge it and try to move on from their loved ones, or they sustain it, and it destroys them." I personally feel that Miriam had her moment of zen. This was her moment from Taken. She knew what she had to do, and she would do it no matter the cost. After all, these motherfuckers had to pay, and she was going to be the vengeance that so many people in the area needed. But she did it in the right way. She did it in the legal way. She didn't grab a gun and take them out one by one. She stalked them. She hunted them. She used them against each other. This is why this story is so brilliant. This woman was cunning. And in my opinion, she's far more badass than Liam Neeson from the Taken series. She's fucking real. She's not a movie. She's not made up. Miriam Rodriguez existed. Now, from here, Miriam used the only tool she really had at her disposal, social media. She would actually sit for hours scrolling through Karen's Facebook, trying to find any connection she could to the kidnappers. She knew about Sama from their meeting and was able to confirm his involvement from interrogating the mechanic uncle who was kidnapped alongside Karen. But the cartel let him go when they realized he was no use to them. But she was able to confirm everything she needed to know about Sama's involvement. And with that, she just had to wait and see if he would ever slip up on social media. It took a while, and one day he did. Now, Sama was tagged in a photo on Facebook with a young woman who was wearing a uniform from an ice cream shop that was located 2 hours away in Ciudad Victoria. Miriam immediately began stalking this woman. She drove to the shop 2 hours away every day, and she began to stake out this location. She would stake her out for so long that she would ultimately learn this young woman's work schedule by heart. But it wasn't enough. She had to wait for Sama to appear. And she did this. I'm not kidding you. She did this for weeks. She stalked this ice cream shop. But one night, her diligence paid off and Sama actually showed up. From there, Miriam followed them back to their place, marked down the address, and then started to work on her next move. She knew that she would need more than just the address in order to get the police to arrest Sama. In fact, she needed a lot more information than that. So she did something wildly creative. Miriam created a disguise. Miriam dyed her hair so Sama wouldn't recognize her. She used an old uniform from her job at the health ministry and then grabbed her old ID, and she spent the day walking around the neighborhood conducting a fake poll in order to gain as much information as she could on Karen's kidnapper. But from there, she unfortunately hit a bit of a snag. With the information in hand, she still needed the police's help. And every single law enforcement officer she approached and law agency she approached actually slammed the door in her face despite having all of this information. Not one of them wanted to help Miriam. That is actually until she found a federal policeman who was willing to help. She sat down with him. She presented him with her files. You know, it comes across like that meme from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but instead of being just Crazy Charlie, it actually worked. It gained the trust of the officer who wanted to help her seek justice. It took a little bit of time, but they were finally able to get a warrant for Sama's arrest. But by the time they got to his place to arrest him, he had unfortunately skipped town. So Miriam did what she was good at. She laid in wait, hoping he would surface again. And you know, I don't really believe in God, to be honest with you. But with what happened next, I would think that this would almost be an assist by the big guy up in the sky. On September 15th, 2014, Mexican Independence Day, Miriam's son Luis was getting ready to close up his hat shop in Ciudad Victoria when a slender man walked into the store to browse. Now, this guy looked kind of familiar, and Luis moved in to take a closer look. It was Sama. So Luis called his mom, and the two of them got in their car and they followed Sama until the police were able to show up and arrest him. When he was arrested, he actually was kicking and screaming like a little bitch, literally screaming about having a heart condition. And I'm just going to say that based upon my American knowledge of the federales and what you hear about how criminals are treated in Mexico, I'm going to go on a limb and just wager that not one of them really gave a shit about Sama's condition. But Sama? Oh, he snitched. He snitched hardcore. He started spilling details about the kidnapping and who was involved, and this actually led to the biggest breakthrough yet at this point in time. One of the names that Sama had mentioned was this guy named Christian Jose Zapata Gonzalez, who was only just 18 at the time when the police grabbed him. Keep in mind that this was young, right? He would have been 15 or 16 at the time of the murder, and this was young even by cartel standards, but Christian was scared. And he was hungry, and in an act of compassion, actually, Miriam gave him some food, and she bought him a Coke from the vending machine. The police were confused by this, to be honest with you, but she reminded them that no matter what, she's a mom, and that this is a young kid, and that sometimes some compassion can go a long way. And it is my belief that this act of kindness actually got Christian to reveal the most important detail of the story, yet still unsolved. And that, of course, is where Karen's body was buried. Christian actually took them to an abandoned farm on the outskirts of town. And according to reports, the farm itself looked like a war zone. Bullets everywhere, destroyed cars, run down buildings. It turns out that's actually what it was. A few months earlier, the Mexican Marines took down a bunch of cartel members during a shootout at the farm. Sadly, though, they didn't happen to take a look at the busted up tractor nearby, because that's actually where Christian pointed out the mass grave. Sadly, it had been so long since Karen went missing that it would be impossible to identify her body there, amass all the other bodies. But Miriam did find Karen's scarf in the seat to her truck cushion in a pile of rubbish nearby. And at this point, she knew her daughter was dead. She knew it was just the reality. But at first, the forensic team didn't identify any of the bones in the pile as belonging to Karen. But Miriam didn't buy it. In fact, she kept pushing and pushing and pushing, getting them to take a look, getting them to absolutely do what they needed to do. And they actually, looking at it again, discovered that there was a femur that belonged to Karen in the pile of bones. At least at this point, the body has been found. But something dawned on Miriam as she left the abandoned farm and finding the body. At the end of the dirt road where the farm was located was a small barbecue joint. Now, this barbecue joint was one where a few years earlier, Miriam and Azalea had eaten at 2 days after Karen went missing. They were eating there while they were out searching for her. The odd thing, though, is that they noticed there was a young woman there when she went a couple years earlier. And this woman was named Elvia Ulysia Betancourt. And she had actually been seated by herself, sipping a soda and just kind of hanging out. And when Miriam asked her whether or not she had heard about Karen's disappearance, I mean, and by then, like literally everyone had heard about Karen's disappearance, Elvia played dumb. She chose just to play dumb. And this actually got Miriam's noggin a-jogging. Maybe Elvia knew something. Maybe Elvia was watching the dirt road at the farm as a lookout for the cartel. I mean, these are a ton of questions that Miriam was asking herself based upon just this recent discovery. And this actually really pissed Miriam off, because she had known Elvia her entire life. I mean, Elvia was disposed of ultimately by her mother, who was a prostitute at a local brothel where her mother worked. Miriam would actually bring Elvia clothing when she was younger, and they were Karen's clothes. So she has a close connection to this woman, and she was really, really, really angry at this point. But to her credit, Miriam kept information on literally everyone related to the cartel that she could get her hands on. And in her notes, she discovered that Elvia was actually romantically involved with one of the kidnappers, who also just so happened to be locked up on completely unrelated charges. So then the question becomes, what did Miriam do? Well, she did what she always does. She waited outside the jail for weeks until Elvia came to visit her lover. And it was here that police were able to come in and arrest Elvia. After they discovered, and this was ultimately later on, but many of the ransom phone calls had actually come from Elvia's house. I mean, how messed up is that, right? Where you have a friend of the family helping out in this kidnapping and ultimate murder. I mean, it's actually not that uncommon, to be honest with you. If you read a lot of these stories, you find out that it's generally someone is involved that the family knows, and it's tragic and it's sad, but this is just where we find ourselves. Now, from here, the trail died down a little bit. Miriam kept plugging away at her mission, as determined as ever to bring Karen's murderers to justice. The problem, though, is that some of the culprits were dead, others were in jail, and some of the ones that were still on the street had moved on from the cartel and tried to forge new lives for themselves. One was a taxi driver, gas delivery man, or in the case of Enrique Yoel Rubio Flores, a born-again Christian. This is my favorite part of the story, by the way. So Miriam actually tracked Flores back to his hometown of Aldama, where she was able to speak with his grandmother and get her to open up about Enrique. Now, the grandmother knew that her grandson was involved in criminal stuff at one point in time or another, and, you know, probably not the full extent of it, but she was just happy that her grandson had turned his life around and was back attending church. With that little piece of information, what did Miriam do? Well, she did the thing that she always does. She made sure to stalk her prey using anything she could to do it. At this point, she started actually attending service at his church. And when she ultimately spotted him, she rang up 5-0, and 5-0 came and arrested him. What was really funny about this is that there was one, like, absolute Karen-level parishioner who was demanding that Miriam show mercy on Enrique Flores, right? They demanded mercy and compassion for him. And according to Miriam's family, she was quoted as saying here, "Where was his compassion when he killed my daughter?" I mean, I don't know. I would love to be in that room. I think that mic drop would be pretty freaking Amazing, right? Just to be a fly on the wall for that whole thing. Now, Miriam herself was actually known for her rather vulgar language when she got riled up or pissed off. In fact, many of the police that she had worked with hated working with her because of how much she swore and how much she held them to account. However, they all really did respect her hustle, and they respected her drive to see this thing through to the end. Now, one of her crazier captures was one at the US-Mexico border. One of the kidnappers, whose names I wasn't actually able to find out, had been on the run since leaving the Los Zetas cartel, and he returned to the border in order to pick up his old trade of selling flowers. Now, a tipster called in with this information, and Miriam immediately grabbed her gun and rushed out the door in order to track him down. No, she was wearing pajamas, no shower, no nothing. She immediately went. And when she arrived, she was a bit too hasty with her approach, and he saw her and he recognized her. Now, this dude took off running, but hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And at the time, the 56-year-old Miriam Rodriguez, she caught up with his ass quick. She grabbed him by the back of the shirt, she wrestled him to the ground, and she shoved her gun into his back, and she threatened to shoot his ass if he moved. And I'm not kidding you, for an hour, she waited with a gun trained on this guy who had helped kill her kid for the police to show up and finally arrest this dude. Like, that is some serious ass restraint. Now, at this point, it had been like 3 years that she had been hunting these people down. But sadly, it was about to come to a terrible end. In March of 2017, nearly two dozen prisoners had escaped the penitentiary in Ciudad Victoria, and this is where a lot of the people that Miriam had put away were at. So you can kind of see where things were going to go. Miriam's family was ultimately worried and had asked the police for protection from possible retaliation. But the cops didn't really see value in it at the time. In fact, the only thing they did do was just send a couple patrols by her home and work occasionally just to check on her. Sadly, it wasn't enough. But this didn't stop Miriam from doing what she did best, hunting these people down and laying in wait until she can have them arrested. In fact, her final stakeout sent her back to Ciudad Victoria to track down a woman who had left the Los Zetas cartel to work as a live-in nanny. As always, Miriam waited for days to confirm her target. She urinated in cups, and she actually ran her battery dead from listening to the radio all night long. According to her son, Luis, he actually had to come and give her a stealth jumpstart once, just because she had a dead battery. But she was determined, absolutely determined. And the police finally got the nanny, and it was all thanks to Miriam. But she wasn't able to celebrate the victory, not for long at least, because not long after the nanny's arrest, Miriam was arriving home at 10 p.m. on Mother's Day back in 2017 when a white Nissan truck filled with escapees from the penitentiary pulled up behind her and shot her 12 times. Her husband, who she had moved back in with, ran out of the house in order to find her face down with her hand in her purse, clutching her gun, dead before she was even able to get a chance to fire back. The bright side is that the cops actually acted pretty quickly, and they were able to arrest two of the culprits and killed one more in a gunfight. Sadly, the cops were actually never able to identify who put out the hit on Miriam Rodriguez. This is information that even 3 years later is still absolutely shrouded in secrecy. But in the aftermath of her death, a couple of interesting things happened. There was another woman who was involved in Karen's murder that was captured as a result of Miriam's investigation, as this woman tried to rebuild her life as a taxi driver while she raised her young son. Now, this woman wasn't a lookout like Elvia was. This woman tortured and beat Karen, going as far as to hang her up and treat her body like a punching bag. This was another person that Miriam absolutely tracked down and was brought to justice even after she died. She inspired many people to fight for justice, and even though she's been reported as saying that she didn't care if the cartel killed her or not, I ultimately think she deeply cared for her family and wanted to do everything she could to keep them and others safe. I mean, kidnapping and ransom in Mexico is not something that is uncommon. The Los Zetas are just very violent and brutal about it. In fact, her determination and drive led to the forming of a collective that wanted to help victims of the kidnapping. But in her death, it faded away, and even though some formed some groups of their own, the vast majority were actually really silenced because of the assassination. The fear that it invoked, it worked. But Miriam, you know, she lived her life without fear. And sadly, that doesn't always inspire others to do the same. This is a crazy story to me. It's a wild story because this is true. It feels like a movie. In fact, it is actually going to be a movie produced by Blumhouse. This is how I found out about this story. And I wanted to share it with you guys because this is the kind of inspiring tale that I think we all need to hear. There's a lot of injustice and terrible things in the world. A lot of bad things happen. There's no getting away from that. But occasionally, a woman, a man, a person comes by and absolutely shows us that with the right determination, you can get some change. She single-handedly took down 10 members of this cartel. This cartel that has no problem brutally murdering hundreds of people. And she, a 50-year-old mother of three, outwitted them and was able to get them brought to justice. Now, sadly, will her murder ever be brought to justice? Probably not. But we can hope one day somebody slips up, somebody says something, and Miriam will get the last laugh. As always, if you guys enjoyed these kind of videos, these long-form storytelling, please do me a favor, leave a like below, leave a comment, let me know a story you may want me to take a look at, and of course, please consider subscribing. I'll talk to you guys next week. Have yourself a great day. Thank you again, and peace out.